got mad. Now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois at 90.1 FM and webcasting live worldwide at WEFT.org. Views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob with some underwriting announcements.
This hour programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, give them a call at 217-328-2295. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber. He believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And finally, the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Bob, and we're going to be having a special guest call in at half past the hour from Detroit. She's been an activist there against the austerity shock doctrine tactics that are being used by corporate America, and she's going to be talking a little bit about getting the real story of what's been going on, because you're not getting it from the corporate media. So anyway, before that, we do have some other labor news stories here, and I guess, Bob?
This week, a ruling came down from the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, and it kind of goes against McDonald's here. It says McDonald's loses big on labor ruling. The burger chain has long pinned labor liabilities on its franchisees, but the National Labor Relations Board ruling weakens that defense. The General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board on Tuesday ruled that McDonald's qualifies as a joint employer of workers at its franchise restaurant locations, a decision that, if upheld, could hold the company responsible for employee conditions and ease the fast food industry's path towards unionization. McDonald's disputed the decision and said that it plans to contest it. Its Senior Vice President of Human Resources, Heather Smedstead, said in a statement that the ruling changes the rules for thousands of small businesses and goes against decades of established law regarding the franchise model in the United States. About 90% of McDonald's 14,000 restaurants in the U.S. are owned by franchisees. And the ruling came in response to 181 unfair labor practice complaints filed in New York by the Fast Food Workers Committee, which is funded partially by the SEIU, Service Employees International Union. They accused the McDonald's of retaliating against workers who took part in organized activity, finding that 43 of those complaints had merit. The NLRB General Counsel, Richard Griffin, said that he would include McDonald's as a joint employer in those cases going forward. And they cited as an example a incident here where it says that McDonald's actually has some worker wage reduction software that they've had all their franchisees install at their stores. So, it seems kind of weird that they would say that it's up to the franchisees when these people are putting their own software into all of the franchise locations there.
There's also... Okay. McDonald's is also in trouble in Russia. They're being investigated for having bad food. They found E. coli bacteria in some of the sandwiches. And we don't know how long McDonald's is going to exist in Russia.
They have problems in China, too. Weren't all of the fast food places in China, you know, Burger King, KFCs, which is really popular over there, and McDonald's, they've all been found to have some type of bacteria in a lot of their food in China, too. So, interesting stuff.
Indeed. Okay, what else do you have, Bob?
I got another story here about a blast at a China car parts supplier killed 68 people. This just happened here overnight, it seems like. At least 68 people were killed and about 187 injured in a major blast at a factory in eastern China that supplies the country's massive automobile industry and indirectly some of the biggest international brands as a subcontractor in the production of wheels. A preliminary investigation suggests that a dust blast caused the explosion early Saturday at the metal polishing plant just outside Shanghai. It's in the Jiangsu province city of Kunshan. Reports said more than 260 people were in the plant at the time, and about 44 people were killed in the initial blast while others died later. Said combustible dust is a widely known industrial hazard that has led to deaths at factories around the world, including in China. Safety experts warned that in the absence of good ventilation, a buildup of heat, oxygen, and a material, often dusty particles such as pulverized metal, can spark massive explosions. So it says here that besides using them internally in China for wheels, these people were subcontracting them, selling them to GM, VW, and most of the major car manufacturers that bring the stuff over here to the States. It also talks about industrial accidents in China kills tens of thousands annually. At least four were killed early last month in the southern city of Haiku at a pharmaceutical maker, an accident blamed on improper storage of materials containing alcohol. And in China's northeast area, more than 100 workers were killed in a poultry factory fire in mid-2013 after being trapped behind locked doors. Combustible dust was cited by Apple for two blasts in 2011 at factories that supply its electronics, including components for devices such as the iPhone. One of those blasts killed 59 people. And it says Chinese authorities regularly publish new regulations in an effort to improve factory safety and reduce workplace deaths, but apparently it's not doing a whole lot of good over there.
Mm. Oh, yeah, there's this being we're in an agricultural area here, dust like that is a major problem,
right?
At grain elevators
Corn
and
dust.
Grain processors.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been many, many explosions in the United States due to grain dust.
Right.
Okay, do you have any other stories, Bob? If not, I mean, if you got one more, let's maybe read it, and then I'm going to give a little background to some of what our caller is going to be talking about here.
There's a talking from the coal miner. Coal giant Alpha Natural Resources revealed plans to shed 1,100 workers at 11 West Virginia surface mines and related operations by mid-October. This is happening in West Virginia, Boone County. And they try to blame part of it on the EPA regulations that are coming out. But in effect, this story says that's just a small part of it. Bigger systemic challenges facing Appalachian coal have been percolating for years, including less expensive natural gas, lousy markets, and dwindling reserves. So Alpha is blaming the EPA regulation for the layoff plans. It set off a chain reaction of political finger-pointing in West Virginia, with both Democrats and Republicans blaming Obama for the EPA regulations and stuff. But they say they have tons of coal sitting there that they can't do anything with. The price of coal has been going down for the sellers for years, and even exporting it to Europe and stuff, the price of coal over there has been going down. But there's an overabundance of it coming out of Wyoming and Illinois.
Okay.
And also, like I say, the low price of natural gas these days from all the fracking that they're doing is driving the coal industry pretty much underground, you know. So,
by the way, plus, coal dust is really dangerous,
too. It is. Oh, yeah. How many coal mines have we had explosions in over the years?
You know? Yeah, that big one, especially out in West Virginia, was it a couple years ago?
Yeah, yeah. So, but, yeah, supposedly 1,100 workers here in West Virginia. They also say that they've taken all the easy coal out from all of their surface mines and strip mines and stuff like that. So all of the major veins are pretty much gone out of West Virginia at this point, so it's really a challenge for them, more costly to get the coal out there and stuff.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, we're going to take a quick music break, and we're going to be right back. You listen to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported WFT radio in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned. Okay, it was Bob Marley, Get Up, Stand Up for Your Rights. And the song goes out to the people of Detroit fighting back against corporate and government collusion in austerity. Shock Doctrine, which we'll be hearing more when our guest calls in from, Monica calls in from Detroit. But before that, Bill has a little topic he wanted to talk about. Winco, was it?
Yeah, and by the way, I'm wearing my Rick Perry glasses today.
Okay.
So do I look a lot smarter?
No.
But, anyway.
You got the Rick Perry haircut, too, Bill.
Yeah. But I don't have a machine gun and a helicopter and National Guard, though.
Okay.
Anyway, Winco. I keep seeing this pop up occasionally on social media sites about how great the Winco company is and, you know, versus a terrible Walmart. Now, the thing is, Winco, they probably do treat their employees halfway decent. That's a fact. But everybody talks about this company being employee-owned and operated.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Well, the thing is, what they have at Winco is called an ESOP, an Employee Stock Ownership Program, which makes it cheap for the company to provide benefits.
Ah.
That's what these ESOPs are generally about. What they're doing is... part of it's, you know, you get stock in the company, and of course you're, you know, however that stock does, and then they're throwing in, I think, 20%, I think it's 20% of their employees' usual pay into a retirement fund. And I didn't see anywhere about health insurance or not. But the thing is, there's a lot of stores around here called County Market. And they're actually owned and operated by Nyman Company. However, when you go into those stores, the person checking you out is wearing a name tag that says employee owned. All right. Well, the next time you see you're in a store, and there might be a lot of other stores that do this kind of thing. If you see a tag that says that, ask them if they get to vote on what their wages are.
And benefits, indeed.
Right. You see, these are just benefits programs is what they are.
They're not cooperatives by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, they're not worker-owned cooperatives, you know, in the sense. And that's where somebody like, where I see a lot of statistics on worker-owned enterprises, I hope that they're excluding these ESOP type things.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been seeing that in a lot of trucks, you know, like as far as, you know, the large trucks on the interstate, you know, the semis, different companies. I've seen it more and more lately, you know, especially being on the road traveling last month. You've seen a lot of different trucking companies that say employee-owned.
Really?
So this is probably the same type of thing, an ESOP. As opposed to a cooperative, you know, big difference, you know.
But, I mean, you know, I'm really, there aren't any Winco stores around here. I understand there's like 96 in the world. But there used to be stores around here called Cub Foods.
Mm-hmm.
Cub Foods was your original big box store.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Cub Foods was owned by the same people who started Winco later on.
Okay.
All right.
I remember Cub Foods. I guess they built non-union and they really decimated the United Food and Commercial Workers in this area as far as the employees actually worked in the stores.
Right. There was a lot of, I mean, they were picketed a lot.
Yes.
You know, informational pickets. I remember that. That was like in the late 70s, early 80s. And they were sort of innovative where they had the huge shelf system where instead of like having stuff stocked in the back room, it's like right up there and they could get it down right with a forklift right away, and which meant that they could have fewer employees and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But that's where Winco comes from.
Okay. Well, that's good information to know. Anyway, I just want to get some public service announced out here while I still can, to let everybody know that the Interdependent Film Festival is still going on over at the Independent Media Center, 202 South Broadway in Urbana. And it's involved, there's a film, today's the last day, and there's a film at noon and at 7, follow with discussions. So check out the Interdependent Film Festival at the Independent Media Center, downtown Urbana Post Office, 202 South Broadway in Urbana. And also today is Progressive Fest at the Champaign Library from 2:30 to 5:30. And also today, starting at 2 o'clock, is another sports show with host, fellow worker, Neil Parthen, and that's on WRFU 104.5. And then tomorrow, Sunday and every Sunday, is Labor's Worldview TV, which is from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6, Urbana Public Television. And also, last but not least, tomorrow is the monthly peace demo at 2 o'clock on the corner of Neil and Main in downtown Champaign. They've moved it to Sundays. I was there a couple Sundays ago, and we had a really good turnout. A lot of people from the mosque came out, and this is, like, of course, after Israel started its offensive against the Palestinian people, and it was a pretty good turnout, and more, I'd say, three out of every four cars that drove by honked in approval and stuff, and so, I mean, it's really interesting. Try to make it out to that tomorrow at 2 o'clock on the corner of Neil and Main, downtown Champaign.
Got one more, Dave.
Yes.
The Isdale Barbecue is this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about those.
It starts today.
Yeah.
I don't have a detailed agenda here for it, but you can go out there and eat some good barbecue and drink a bunch of beer.
Yeah, that's an interesting little town out in south of Champaign in central Illinois. Mostly Irish heritage people settled
there.
It's
an enclave of Irish people, but you know how that happened?
No, the railroads?
The railroads, these people, their ancestors worked on the railroad, and the railroad gave them land.
Okay.
There.
Because, as
you remember, the railroads always got a bunch of land.
Yeah, sure.
I think, 2 miles on each side of the track or something?
Oh, that much, wow.
1 mile, I think.
And actually, some pretty good fortunes have been made off of that farmland over the years.
But I've always heard about the great celebrations they have in Isdale, you know, right in the parking lot of the Catholic Church, plenty of alcohol and everything else. And
oh, yeah.
No restraints on that there.
I can't remember if they...
Not with the Catholics.
Or the Irish.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember if they still have the roulette wheels and stuff.
Okay.
Either. I haven't been over there for actually quite some time.
And that place has some interesting history going back to Prohibition era, too, right?
I'm not sure about that, but it used to be the deal with Champaign County was dry on Sundays.
Uh-huh.
And so it was one of the towns. See, it's right on the border.
Of Champaign County?
Champaign County, and so everybody go out there.
Okay.
Or maybe it was the city of Champaign was dry.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, some interesting little local history there. But anyway, just a little background about, you know, our caller, Monica, is going to be calling in from Detroit. Massive water shutoffs have been drawing attention to this humanitarian crisis that's been going on in Detroit, even though the United Nations Commission dealing with water resources and access to portable water has condemned the conditions prevailing in the majority African-American municipality in Detroit. The main response to the documentation of gross human rights violations has been a public relations campaign to distribute bottled water. Gleaners Food Bank, a charitable agency that distributes food to low-income families throughout southeast Michigan, said in a July press release that it is making 6,000 gallons of fresh water available to Detroit residents. In addition, Gleaners has secured an additional truckload of water from Nestle Waters North America and AmeriCares to make available to Detroiters who may need it. What's behind all this? I mean, if you listen to the corporate media, it's because these lazy poor people don't want to pay their water bills and would rather spend their money on cable and satellite TV and internet and other luxuries. But that's far from the truth. Thousands of water shutoffs have been carried out under the auspices of the Detroit Water and Sewage Department by a private corporation hired by the unelected emergency manager Kevin Orr, appointed by Republican Governor Rick Snyder, has said very little about the mass terminations of water service to residents. However, June 26, Detroit Free Press editorial made clear, or spokesperson Bill Nolley said, the shutoff policy is a, quote, necessary part of Detroit's restructuring. Nestle's Water of North America is the largest bottled water corporation in the U.S. The parent company's worldwide operation cited by many as a major proponent of the privatization of waterways and services. Major challenge to Nestle's in Michigan, which is surrounded by four of the five Great Lakes, revolves around their efforts to retrieve the bottled water for profit, a process that causes environmental damage. The involvement of such a corporation in the current crisis in Detroit should be assessed from the history of the company, as well as the role of AmeriCares. AmeriCares was formed in conjunction with the collapse of U.S. imperialist intervention in Vietnam during 1975. The group says it provides humanitarian disaster relief to people in 90 countries. But the intervention of both Nestle's and AmeriCare indicates the way in which the ruling class is responding to the international attention centered on Detroit. Instead of viewing it as a crisis of poverty, dictatorial political rule, and economic exploitation caused by the banks and corporations, the crisis portrayed as a humanitarian project, you know, like that's just something that just happened, a freak of nature or something, which is far from the truth. Although there is no question that the situation in Detroit represents a humanitarian disaster, the crisis stems from the systemic corporate devastation of the city through job losses, predatory home mortgage and municipal lending, and institutional racism. The ruling class and its media refuse to address the problems at the root of the crisis they created. Over $560 million was paid out in 2012 to four major banks, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, to determine interest rate swaps imposed, and the emergency manager through the bankruptcy court is not pursuing the restitution for the financial crimes committed against the residents of the city, but is instead attacking the assets, jobs, healthcare programs, pensions, and water resources that belong to the people. Activists in Detroit have been confronting the bank-imposed austerity plaguing the city. Every week there are Freedom Friday demonstrations beginning and spreading throughout downtown to confront and expose the real criminals behind the crisis. Anyway, the emergency manager, who's appointed by the Republican governor of Michigan at the behest of the banks, wants to sell or lease the public-owned water department. To make the deal look better to groups who want to buy it, he is getting rid of bills owed to the department by shutting off people's water. It continues, the people of Detroit's own they own the water department is worth billions, and when a private company owns a city's water department, they only want profit. Water rates go up and quality goes down, and they don't know how to run it. Private corporations in the city-owned golf course owe hundreds of thousands in arrears, but their water services have not been shut off. Despite demands for a moratorium on shutoffs, there has been no announcement by the emergency manager that one will be enacted. And so, wow, I mean, you talk about a shock doctrine going into effect there. I haven't seen anything like this since the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
Dave, it's been reported there, right, that the Ford Field, where the Detroit Lions play, owes over $100,000 to the water company.
Uh-huh.
And Detroit's Joe Louis Arena, where the Red Wings play, owes like $50,000, something like that.
Yeah, but they haven't shut their water off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Instead, they're going after these people that are 2 or 3 months behind and owe $152 or something like that. So,
You know what this reminds me of is Bechtel Corporation.
Oh, yes.
In Bolivia, where someone had to come in and really organize their water supply. You know, it was necessary. They did this, and then they jacked up the water rates. They prevented people from even getting rainwater. The peasants couldn't pay for their own water, and it created a revolution.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Look what
The rates went up tenfold in Bolivia. Jim's talking about, and people that had wells were even taxed on their wells. I mean, an exorbitant amount. I mean, it was just wow. I mean, unbelievable. But yes, you're right. This does bring back memories of that crisis there. But it ultimately turned out for the better. Unfortunately, a lot of people died in the process of trying to get back people taking back control. You know, and this shouldn't be happening at all. But anyway, we're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to be waiting for our caller to call in live from Detroit. You're listening to the World Labor Hour, WFT Listen Support Community Radio Station in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the story you're about to hear is true and long overdue. The names have not been changed to expose the guilty. Bankersville, USA, land of swap opportunity. They caused a housing crisis in the community, selling bad loans like bundles of dope. They called it suicide mortgage, ought to come with a rope. In Hudson City, there was 5 foreclosure gangs. The most ruthless one was Brian Moynihan's home after 8 years in Washington Federal, looking for his old flame, Cafe General. But word on the street, she been sleeping with the enemy. Had a daughter with Jamie Dimon and named the Equity. James Gorman put the fair in Savoir, drove an almond, colored almond, flag star Jaguar. Latin assassin by the name of West Bronco, hostage negotiator.
But I had to keep reminding myself that if I keep my story quiet, others won't know that you can fight.
It's time to wake up and get with the movement. Hear the message in the music now. We can fight back, or we can lay down, or beat back the bank attack and stay proud. They got bailed out, we getting sold out. Some living underwater in their own house. They hear the word foreclosure, they get scared and think it's all over. But nah, the fight just begun. It ain't gonna be easy, but it must be won. Cause Bank of America's bad for America. Congress held hostage, they kidnapped the treasurer. This ain't the dream in the land of America, but we could change that if we stand up together. Demand something better than the status quo. We elect, they neglect, then they have to go. We gon' beat back the bank attack. We gon' beat back that bank attack. We gon' beat back the bank attack. Capitalism, political arcade. Stop the evictions, we picket and blockade. March and rally for social justice. Ford signatures got the robo busted. Do the right thing now, reduce the principal. Job growth, increase residuals. We're solidified, can't divide and conquer. When we fight, we win. The pride to prosper. With people power, we equal the power. Civil disobedience to veto the dollar. Close our bank accounts, oppose their policy.
Okay, that was the hip-hop band Twice Thou. And anyway, this leads to, a lot of interesting discussion here about the crisis in Detroit and what's really behind it. Jim, you want to talk about the 2008 financial crisis? You think there's some interrelated things here?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Starting in about 2003, 2004, the Wall Street Big Six, and especially Goldman Sachs, started bundling all these toxic assets that were AAA rated, mm-hmm. and selling them to municipalities, selling them overseas to countries in Europe, and then betting that they would fail.
Yeah, because
and making trillions of dollars in the fact that these failed. And this is what has put Europe in such a crisis right now.
Yeah, these AAA rated
toxics.
you know, they were AAA rated, but how did that happen? Was the rating agencies knew these were toxic and still gave them AAA ratings?
Yeah, well, we'll have to go to
Moody's conspiracy. And
right.
Oh, this has been. This came out in what's his name? Charles Ferguson's film. Inside Job.
Yeah.
The Moody's and the other big rating agency S&P. Knew. Yeah. Yes, knew these were toxic, and
it's
they still went ahead.
Conflict of interest.
Yes, they
because
still
they
went
are
ahead.
They are being paid by the people they rate.
Yes, right. Exactly, Bill. Exactly. So anyway, Jim, please continue. I just had to throw that in there.
So it still boggles my mind mm-hmm. that people aren't pointing the finger at Wall Street on this. That Europe isn't. Europe's in the crisis that it is precisely because this happened,
mm-hmm.
especially to Greece,
yes.
but to us and Southern Europe in particular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, why did the Europeans point the finger at Wall Street? Well, we have economic ties with Wall Street, which basically runs the United States government. You know, mm-hmm. And I used an expression before, all roads lead to Wall Street. In the final instance, they do.
Yeah. You know, Bill Gurrell made an interesting observation back when the financial crisis was happening in the fall of 2008. He said, are you aware that the last three Treasury secretaries we've had under Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama have all come out of one financial firm, Goldman Sachs? We're talking about Robert Rubin, Hank Paulson, and then Timothy Geithner.
As Jim says, their tentacles spread to other countries, too. The higher ups in Japan and some mm-hmm. of the European countries. They
oh, sure.
all get them people out of the same company, their Goldman Sachs.
Yep.
Well, this is precisely why this new BRICS group has been formed for an alternative banking system.
And what does BRICS stand for?
Oh, it's Brazil and the
Russia,
Russia,
India.
Yeah.
China, of course.
Yeah.
And
South Africa,
yes, thank you. There's all the initials, okay.
Yeah. Because eventually we're going to have an international currency collapse. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. This is going to happen.
Bitcoin.
And this is why they want to get off
your
the dollar.
Bitcoins right now.
Right.
Yeah, I heard that. I don't know if I, you know, the Bitcoin seems, it's just not tangible enough to me. It just seems a little, I don't know, even though a lot of people have been promoting those.
Well, I always believe, that gold is fiat money because mm-hmm. it has no intrinsic value. And in fact, you know, it's like a friend of mine said once, well, if everything collapses and goes to hell, the most valuable metal will be lead.
Yeah, food, water, shelter.
Yeah.
And,
look, you know,
yes, ammunition, firearms. You're right, unfortunately.
You don't plant fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. That's what I'm doing, man. They have these shows about these preppers, you know. Well, what are you going to do when you run out of your year's worth of MREs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, meals ready to eat.
Oh, yeah, from the military? Yeah.
Right. You know, these people, they're always showing them they're stocking all their houses with all this stuff, mm-hmm. you know. And it's like, yeah, it's going to run out eventually.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that. But nevertheless, I mean, you know, that's the thing is, as one of our guests here in the studio said, it seems like the United States government has become a subsidiary of Goldman Sachs. You know, what a statement. But, you know, in Detroit, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, you know, the water shutoffs, an attempt to try to, I think, twofold, privatize the public water service. Excuse me, at the same time push out the people living in the city of Detroit so they can gentrify it. You know, it's kind of similar to what's happened down in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. And the other thing, too, is the whole pension crisis going on and how Detroit became a default to begin with, you know, is exactly what you're talking about. The municipality bought all these phony AAA-rated bonds and then were left holding the bag, you know.
Yeah, and this is why the pension plan's in such difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unlike... You know, when Jimmy Hoffa ran the Teamsters Pension Fund, you know, he lent it all out to the casinos.
And the mob,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and the mobs. And
they always made money.
Yeah, they made
you know,
money. And the money came back into the Teamsters Fund.
Yeah.
You know, they were making money off the mob money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they had no pension problem that, at that time.
Not that we're advocating that. It's just that we're trying to show just how bad... you know, the whole, you know, the capitalist system in this country has become with this crony capitalism and the financial banks and financial institutions basically running the show.
Well, yesterday I was in a building that was at least partially financed by the laborers, my pension fund,
mm-hmm.
the laborers' pension fund,
mm.
and that is the South Carl Building,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least part of that, maybe when they redid the parking lot or whatever it was there, but there was a big sign out there about the laborers investing in that. And their idea is to invest in union-built projects.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're still waiting for our caller to call in. And this is always, well, we have this happen occasionally here in the World Labor Hour. I mean, I don't know, maybe some emergency crisis came up in Detroit. I wouldn't doubt it. And why she hasn't called in yet, but let's hope that she, if you're listening, Monica, please call in. And you have the phone number, of course. But in the meantime, yes.
Well, we can always, last week we were talking about the Ukraine. We could always go to Israel and Palestine.
Okay, well, which one do you want to go first? Do you want to
Let's go to a recording so we can argue.
Okay, that sounds good. Let's see here. Okay, see what kind of music I can pull up here in the meantime. How about this one here? Okay, well, you're listening to World Labor Hour on WFT, listen to Support Community Radio Station, from broadcasting from Champaign, Illinois, and we'll be right back after this music break.
They put their club upside your head and then accuse you of attacking them. My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. This is American democracy. And those of you who are familiar with it know that in America, democracy is hypocrisy. Now, if I'm wrong, put me in jail. But if you can prove that if democracy is not hypocrisy, then don't put your hands on me.
This time the revolution will be televised. Yeah. Broadcast live through Mandela's eyes. Sparked by the speech of Martin. Blocks rally in the streets, they marching. The greedy banks die a thousand thousand. By any means necessary, Malcolm X. Yes. We locking on from Boston to Compton. Risking arrest to get the mission accomplished.
What we fighting for?
We fighting for our kids' future.
Against who?
Against the sons of J. Edgar Hoover.
From the Great Depression
to the Great Recession.
This is the home of the brave.
Where's the great redemption? Homeland victory. Joan of Arc refused to move, think Rosa Parks. Super rich Warren Buffett said tax the wealthy. Citizen militia Prince Machiavelli. Heartbreak Hill, we ain't built to lose a marathon. Assalamu alaikum, Louis Farrakhan. From the roots of Bob Marley. With the vision and the attitude of Marcus Garvey.
Show me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like. Tell me what democracy looks like.
Who we shooting? Revolutionary suicide, Huey Newton. Leaders rise up and stand tall for all. Liberation, Amilcar Cabral. The law set up for nefarious judgment. We abolitionists, Harriet Tubman, Mohandas Gandhi. Struggle for civil rights, Nat Turner brought batteries to the pillow fight. Black Panthers in a concrete jungle. Feast of famine when economies crumble. For every action, there's a reaction. And there's more to the death of Michael Jackson.
Show me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like. Tell me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy.
Okay, we're back. That was again Twice Thou, and we're still waiting for our caller from Detroit. Monica, if you're listening, please call in. A lot of people are really looking forward to hearing your on the ground report. But anyway, in the meantime, I guess we're going to talk about some other issues of the day. Anyway, Jim, what do you think? What happened this last week between last Saturday and today that you think is interesting out there that some of the listeners should know about?
Well, first of all, you're not getting from the corporate or capitalist media a correct view of what's going on either in the Ukraine or what is going on in the Gaza district. You have to go to things like everybody's most hated channel, RT, which I think...
What is RT?
It's Russia Today.
And that's on satellite. I think it's on Dish Network Satellite, right?
It is on Dish Network Satellite, but mm-hmm. it's also
on Free Speech TV. Yeah, no. It's on Free Speech TV.
They got some segments on it. I think like the Tom Hartman show.
Just to interrupt something here, there is something on Free Speech TV. Maybe we should start a campaign. And it's not that I really dislike this person so much, but I don't think she's appropriate.
Who's
that? Stephanie Miller.
And who is she?
She's a liberal Democrat talk show host.
Okay, I'm not even familiar with her.
Actually, her father ran with Barry Goldwater. He was a vice presidential candidate.
Okay. And what is it you don't like about her?
She's just not... Free Speech TV has been pretty radical, and they're giving like a two-hour chunk of time to somebody who's pretty much just a standard Democrat. Somebody who was the other day criticizing Edward Snowden.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, it's not like I hate her that or anything like that. It's just I don't think she's appropriate for that network.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, Jim.
Okay, Jim. So, So, basically, who's been villainizing RT television?
Britain, France, the United States. What's happened is that it used to be Al Jazeera was the one that we were targeting. You know,
you mean that the U.S. government was targeting, not us.
Thank you. Yes. In fact, in the King David Hotel in the invasion of Iraq, not King David, the Palestine Hotel.
Yeah. What irony there. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. we'll get into that one if you want. But anyway, on the fifth floor, where Al Jazeera had told the United States exactly where they were along with other journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they did when they pulled into the square is one tank looked right at the gun barrel right at the fifth floor and blew them all away.
Mm-hmm.
So,
kind of like what the Israelis did with the UN school this week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You call them and tell them that where you are, and you're making a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just give them the target.
Well, yeah, because they don't want any kind of independent, news sources out there. They want only information that they control. You know, and it's just that, you know, people were so outraged and couldn't understand why this happened. Well, of course, it's not completely understandable. I mean, you know, the first thing they want to do is cover up their crimes, you know, and they want to make sure that only, you know, they learned lessons from Vietnam just like we did. And one of the lessons they learned from Vietnam is, you know, in Vietnam, the television reporters were allowed to pretty much go everywhere they want and film whatever they saw, like they did in World War II. Well, as a result of that, the American people saw the Vietnam War brought to their living rooms, you know, on television. I mean, graphic. As all in the reality of it, and they decided that that was never going to happen again. And ever since the invasion of Grenada under Ronald Reagan, the media has been totally controlled by the military. I mean, and only certain embedded reporters are allowed to go along with, and those are ones that are going to carry the party line, so to speak.
Okay, here's some top stories from the Middle East. Settler management. This is off of Labor Start. These are headlines. I got to go back now. Here's one. SodaStream in occupied West Bank fired 60 Palestinian employees in an act of collective punishment. People might recall that SodaStream has a fairly popular product in the United States where you make your own soda pop.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's an Israeli company. And right there. See, there's other things going on there. I keep accidentally tapping here. And going to the wrong page. Okay. Settler management against Palestinian workers. Another headline. Help raise legal defense funds to halt an attempt to bust the unionization of Palestine workers under cover of Gaza war. Factory owners at West Bank settlement threaten violence against striking workers. Police arrest union leaders. And so on and so forth. I mean, there's a lot more stuff going on in the world than some of these conflicts. There's always, I've noticed over the years, there's always been labor action in Israel and Palestine in various ways.
That's correct.
And
even the demonstrations that Israeli peace activists have been on have been attacked by these right-wing mobs. So far, there haven't been any of them killed, but you don't even dare criticize the Tel Aviv government. I mean, whatever they say between themselves, whatever differences they have, are not really aired to the public. So you have this kind of monolithic, with important exceptions. Haaretz has got one reporter that has to have a bodyguard.
Oh, wow.
Who's screaming about the injustice of what's going on in the Gaza Strip.
Mm-hmm.
We have to understand that since 2006, there has been a blockade, which means you cannot get out by land, you cannot get out by sea, and there's a big sea coast on the Gaza Strip. At the moment, the fishermen cannot even go out and fish.
They don't allow food into the country either.
Right.
They actually called this giving them a diet, and they would reduce food supplies to the average of 2,000 calories per day per Palestinian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read somewhere about some UN reports that the children, a large percentage of the children in Gaza are starting to suffer from anemia and other illnesses resulting from malnutrition.
Okay, here's some Ukraine. Kharkiv Autonomous Workers Union members create social center. Armed groups continue attacks on unions and their leaders. Coal mines in Ukraine could close as fighting continues. Terrorists encroach upon mines in Donetsk Oblast.
Who the terrorists? That word's been so misused and so thrown around. You know,
The independent trade unions of miners gave results. What I'm saying is there's worker activity going on, and it's like in the United States. It's the most important thing in people's lives is their work.
Of course,
I mean it's a very large part of it, and it's totally ignored.
They can't fish
as a role for people. You see, we're not workers, we're consumers. These people aren't workers, they're terrorists. Those people aren't workers, they're oppressed, they're Palestinians. That's why we need to identify as workers and work for the class struggle instead of all of this Palestinian versus Jewish, and they're both really Semitic peoples.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of going off.
No, that's
This is understandable, Bill. The word terrorist gets used for everything. You've got eco-terrorists, you've got animal rights terrorists. Any group that opposes the policy of the of corporation leaders and does nonviolent civil disobedience is accused of being a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
So the terrorists...
Well, actually, the Patriot Act has some provisions for economic disruption.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that would identify you as a terrorist. Mm-hmm.
Which could be a strike.
Right.
You know,
boycott.
Okay. Yeah.
So the word terrorist in the Ukraine is being used to describe the People's Republic of Donetsk and Luhansk. There are two sections. They call themselves that, and they have a self-defense unit. They are not attacking Ukraine. The Ukrainian army is attacking them.
Because they want to succeed and form their own independent country.
And they weren't allowed to vote in the last election. Even when the Malaysian aircraft came down, they continued battering and wouldn't allow the people, it took days and days in order for teams of investigators to investigate the crash to actually get in there. There was no problem with the self-defense forces of the embattled provinces, but I stand solidly behind them. So basically, the government... What you call the National Guard is essentially the right sector what they call mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we know who that is now. It's another one of Eric Prince's, formerly Blackwater, is now called Greystone.
See? How many times have they changed names?
Oh, they have to change it all the time.
Yeah. And they moved to Dubai not too long ago, too, to probably to two things, probably to avoid prosecution as well as paying income taxes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bill, you're going to say something?
Well, I was thinking we kind of started out with the media on this. And it reminds me a few months ago, right kind of after this first started in Ukraine, I was talking to this retired plumber, union plumber, probably about 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, why didn't Obama stand up to Putin? And I'm like, well, are you ready to go to war over this?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, no. And I said, well.
Well, also my answer would be,
hubba, 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 hubba,
yeah.
You know.
Who's, okay,
But then, how many countries is that people just are getting worked up that way, yeah, and they aren't even thinking things through at all?
Right. In the last 10, 15 years, how many countries has Russia invaded? How many countries has Russia overthrown democratically elected governments, yeah, through coups?
How many hundreds of thousands of people have they killed?
Yeah, if not millions. Yeah,
millions, maybe.
Yes, and this is not what the American people want. This is what the 1% want in order to enrich themselves and to impoverish us further. Because, you know, it's funny, you want to do little anecdotal things. I remember after the invasion of Iraq in 2003, a couple months afterwards, I was at a gas station in Mahomet, and this one guy got out of his car and saw another guy he knew, and he goes, "Gosh, I can't believe these gas prices. I thought after the invasion of Iraq, our gas was going to go down in price." No, just the opposite. Because it's not about helping the American people. These whole imperialist acts of economic control, basically trying to basically grab people's resources and their cheap labor, is to enrich the 1%. It's not to help the average American out there.
And don't forget that war was only going to cost a couple of billion dollars, and it would pay for itself through the oil afterwards.
Yes, and what happened to those weapons of mass destruction?
But what happened to
the oil? They were on the turkey farm that they ever found. Okay, that's right.
What happened to the oil?
Yeah.
I mean, what was their idea to somehow make money off that oil to repay the United States?
Well,
that's illegal.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, and how many U.S. military bases are there in the world? Over 1,000, you know. And as far as I know, Russia's only got one military base, and that's in Syria, outside of Russian soil. So, and whose border is this all going on next to? It's not happening in Mexico or Quebec.
Right.
You know, this is the important thing to put in perspective here. You know.
Yeah. Well, what if Russia started? Aiding drug lords in Mexico or something?
Yeah.
Somehow, that's.
But anyway, I mean, the whole thing is here is that, you know, this government of Kiev that's in power now was basically brought about by a bloody violent coup. Basically, outright fascist groups were armed and trained and financed with our tax dollars. Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland was bragging about how that they've spent $5 billion in the last several years to bring about a government in Ukraine to their liking.
Yeah, well, how about the NGOs? We can't forget those, like the National Endowment for Democracy, and perhaps,
yep,
what was the labor version of that?
Oh,
it was notorious in the
international. U.S. aid for international labor development or something like
that.
Yeah,
but there was a labor component,
yes,
that was sort of administered by the AFL-CIO, which had been notorious, at least in the Western Hemisphere, for meddling.
Yes, indeed. And later came to play in Russia after the end of the Cold War. And in fact, there was a resolution brought up by the state. By I don't know how many central labor councils in the AFL-CIO throughout the country, and even including the whole entire state AFL-CIO Federation of California, demanding that John Sweeney instruct his head of this department in the AFL-CIO that gets funding from the State Department every year basically wanting to know what their activities are and their plans for the next few years. Basically opening up the records, make them transparent. Outright refused. Outright refused a majority vote of the delegates at AFL-CIO convention.
Okay, this is true.
I think the organization you were looking for is the International Labor Organization, the ILO.
No.
This is an American thing. It's through the State
but
Department.
But this is
there's one completely off different thing I want to bring up.
Okay.
And I am totally disgusted with seeing video and pictures of people protesting against these poor Central American children. Any American who does not want to help sure, they're not all going to be cute. They're not all going to be pretty. And maybe there are some M13 or whatever gang members sprinkled in there. But you do not deserve to be to live in this country if you would not help these refugees out. And they are escaping from conditions largely created through the meddling of the American government and American corporations.
Very well said,
Bill.
Indeed. This is the thing. I mean, again, the chickens are coming home to roost, you know.
Right.
But, you know, the sad part about this is the American people, our tax dollars have been used to do these things that has caused instability in these countries. But we didn't want this. We didn't want our tax dollars spent for this crap.
Well, the gangs are from people. started in the United States, and we deported them back to El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's gangs there now.
Okay, and so we're going to take a quick music break, and then it looks like we're kind of running out of time here. We're going to have to go into the Union Edge.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that in.
Indeed.
Somewhere.
Good point. Okay, you've been listening to the World Labor Hour on Listen Support Community Radio Station, WFT in Champaign. Stay tuned till next week. And in the meantime, be safe and power to the people. Take care. Okay, I guess we're back on the air here. We got a couple calls, and I guess you know, we can preempt a little bit of Union Edge here to talk about. So, Bob, you want to tell us about the callers that called in?
One caller wanted to know when the Labor Hour thought that the U.S. would end its embargo of Cuba. And another caller suggested that the organization we were thinking of with the labor component was USAID.
Okay, so okay.
If we have some comments on those over the next open that minute up. Or two.
Bill, Jim?
Well, we could talk about Cuba. We have no intention of lifting the embargo. It's actually profitable to us, or they would.
Well, isn't the real contention here about the companies that were American companies like Sinclair Oil, and some other place, American-owned companies in Cuba that were nationalized by the Cuban government after basically the United States refused to provide any aid to the new government. This is before Castro signed any mutual cooperation agreements with Russia or anything else. I'm kind of a little fuzzy on that history, but I think that is the real main reason why the embargo is still in place.
Well, you may be right. I cannot argue that point.
And travel restrictions to Cuba have been loosened a bit. I mean, it is possible now for Americans to travel from Miami or New York to directly to Havana. But, you know, there's still a lot of restrictions, as I know, because I traveled there a couple summers ago. I mean, you got to pay a $300 fee to the State Department just for the privilege. You're supposed to only stay in approved hotels. You're supposed to only be able to go there under certain auspices of a certain conference or whatever, which I did. You're supposed to stay within your group, and basically trying to restrict your access to the Cuban people and stuff.
Another caller suggested they enjoyed our comments about terrorism and clarifications of some of the definitions and use of that word in this country.
It really amazes me how the FBI's number one domestic terrorist threat is considered the animal rights activist groups that have killed nobody, who basically their most violent act is basically breaking and entering and freeing laboratory animals or whatever. You know, wow, that's real danger, isn't it, to us here? Oh, be afraid, be very afraid.
Or as Jim suggested, what they refer to as eco-terrorists.
Yeah.
Somebody who's sitting up in a tree trying to save it from being cut down.
So what the new definition of terrorism is anyone that interferes with corporate profits or opposes the ruling class's policies in this country, no matter how harmful they are to working people or our food and safety or health, for that matter.
Right. Well, they have one guy under indictment now. I can't think of his name. For is a photojournalist filming all these abuses of animals that go
in these factory farms.
In these factory farms, and they, you know, so I don't know if he's going to get to do hard time in jail or not, but
for taking photographs, exposing the truth, facing federal time in prison.
Yep,
unbelievable. But
oh, by the way, USAID is aid for international development.
Okay.
It's not. I'm still looking for this specific.
Yeah, thing. I know what you're talking about, Bill, but I can't think of the name.
Mm-hmm. Labor is so buried in the United States, it's difficult for me to find this Googling. It should pop right up.
Yeah, good point.
But it's something like, it'd be for democracy at the end of it.
Yeah, but you know, going back to these NGOs, I mean, this is what they've been trying to do to Venezuela, you know, is basically form these fake AstroTurf, you know, fake grassroots organizations, otherwise known as AstroTurf organizations, to basically disrupt and cause problems, everything from creating food shortages to doing violent protests on the streets and other things to try to undermine democratically elected governments while they're trying to claim that they're fighting tyranny and wanting to promote democracy. Well, that's the whole thing, is the corporate media, when they say to promote freedom, democracy, they're talking about promoting freedom, democracy for corporations, not people. I mean, that's really the bottom line. Any other comments before we go over to the Union Edge, gentlemen?
Well, Yeah, just one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get alternate views from the corporate or capitalist media.
You mean in addition,
and you have to, and you have
to, okay.
Right? It's going to cost you some money to do that, but you know, if you want to know, you know, you're going to have to do that because they are not going to make it easy for you
to know the
in
truth,
their society.
Yes.
Doesn't
the media,
cost any money to listen to WEFT. Although we are going to have our pledge drive in a month.
Okay,
all right.
Let's do that.
Okay,
this station has got to stay on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, please contribute. I always do, but it's not as much as I'd like to, but then I don't have as much money as I would like to either. But do contribute. We can't. We're not financially in a good position. We're not going to lose this station. I'll tell you that right now. But every dollar helps.
Yes, indeed. No amount's too small. And you know what? Besides WFT here in Central Illinois, there are other listener support community radio stations all over the country. And this is something that needs to be nurtured and hopefully to expand it, because this is, besides the internet, this is one of the few information sources out there in which provides a not just a variety of political opinion, but also a huge variety of musical genres that you won't hear on corporate radio.
Okay, Dave, one last thing. What we did find out is that people wanted to ask questions today, mm-hmm. and called in.
Yes.
And I think we should have part of the show or even extend another half an hour to field questions from our listeners.
Okay, Jim. I know you've said this before, and I think you're absolutely right. I think we need to start opening the phone lines. Thank you for that. And thank you, callers, for calling in, because we do definitely like to hear feedback. So we're, again, going to sign off the air. Bill, you have one other thing?
No, I thought I was finding this. But.
Oh, well, you'll find it as soon as we go off the air. I just know it. So anyway, you've been listening to the World Labor Hour on WFT Listener Support Community Radio Station. So until next week, tune in.
Never
a dull moment. And anyway, stay tuned for the Union Edge with host Charles Showalter. Be safe.